All right, I'm back. It's Delia on Food for Thought. WNTI 91.9 in Hackettstown. Looks like the sun's coming through, blue sky out there. And I have with me on the air Bob Dobbs, who is a media ecologist. Actually, I'm going to bring him up here. And so Bob Dobbs is a media ecologist and communications consultant who was Marshall McLuhan's archivist. And recently he was a featured speaker at the International UFO Conference in Mesquite, Nevada, and explained the effect of the electronic environment on aliens. But here we will apply his insights to health as well. So basically, good morning.
Good morning, Delia.
And, you know, I just want to mention, too, that if I'm not mistaken here, the UFO conference is about learning about man's place in the cosmos. Is that right?
Yes, it mirrored the Time magazine issue that week, which was last week. The cover story was How Man Evolved. And a lot of these people in the UFO field think that we were genetically engineered and altered at some point.
Okay, so before we get into that most fascinating subject, let's go back and talk a little bit about who you are, Bob. And, you know, why were you the featured speaker at this UFO conference?
Well, who I was in terms of my past was I was fortunate enough to meet Marsh McLuhan years ago, and I was never a student of him, but I started hanging around in his seminars, which were once a week for free. You could drop in from the public. You didn't have to be registered at the University of Toronto. And I then started looking at all his articles and researching them, and most students were just taking his courses and dealing with him as a teacher. Even when he was sort of well-known in the 60s, they still, in that context, didn't think of that and just took what he subscribed and ascribed on his reading list. But I got into all his other stuff that was published all over the place. He published everywhere, all kinds of journals, intellectual, academic, and popular. And I found out there was a whole bunch of stuff he's saying there that's not really in his classes. So I became an expert on his stuff, and he eventually realized it, and I became the official archivist.
So for those people in the listening audience, Bob, who aren't familiar with McLuhan and his writings or his philosophy, can you encapsulate it a bit?
Well, he is well known in the 60s for calling the world a global village, and he came up with the aphorism, the medium is the message, and then it became the medium is the massage. So he was this media gadfly popping up in all over the place, first popularized by Tom Wolfe in New York City. And he would meet with the Beatles and Tim Leary and President Lyndon Johnson. He was all over the place commenting on things. He was a sort of a mainstream Tim Leary, and accepted in the quarters of power as well as in the fringes of the new pop street culture. So he was all over the place and really was the most famous Canadian that ever had been produced. And then he went on, and I would say when Wired magazine came out in the 90s, he was made Wired magazine's patron saint. So there was a real revival of interest in McLuhan because he seemed to understand the effects of new technologies, and his books pointed out that and helped us help people get into this. And that was retrieved as people saw change really swamping them in the 90s.
So he would have been like a prophet of the new technological age, would you say?
Right. And being a prophet, he was totally misunderstood. They didn't know how much of what he was doing was performance art and theater, and he had a very complex interpretation of Finning's Wake, the great book by James Joyce that no one ever mastered. But he claimed to understand it, and he was always translating Finning's Wake. But when he was talking to the Beatles or on Mike Wallace and 60 Minutes and those kind of shows, he didn't bring up the Finney's Wake. No one knew that was his hidden agenda. So he had a very literary purpose. He wanted to preserve literate culture because he was a professor of English, but everybody thought he was for all these new technologies. And he wasn't neither for nor against. He had a way of looking at them objectively.
So what do you think he would say about what's going on right now with the, you know, what's happening with the Y2K and just basically what's going down technologically?
Well, he would say, this is a speculation.
Hmm.
This is an example of his approach. He would say about the 90s, if you asked him about all this new media, you'd say, well, would you get a web page? Would you go on the Internet? Which is the question any beginning consumer of this new technology has to wonder, whether they're even going to participate. And they used to wonder whether he would have a TV set back in the 50s and 60s. So he would say, yes, I would go on the Internet and form a web page, but I would get James Joyce to write the instructions on how to get to it. Now, that would be an esoteric comment if you weren't too familiar with Joyce, but for those who knew, it would be obvious. If you read Finnegan's Wake, it's an impossible book really to read. You have to have another way of approaching it.
Mm.
So what he's saying, it would be a joke. This would be a typical way he would respond, in popular media. He would say, yeah, I would use it, but I'd get James Joyce to write the instructions on how to find it.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you wouldn't find him.
Right.
So he was like a Western version of his Zen paradox.
So what do you think he would say about the International UFO Conference in Mesquite, Nevada?
Well, he actually did talk about anti-gravity vehicles. He never talked about UFOs, but he said that the new electronic technologies create a post-visual space, a post-detached space, a very involved tribal space, but also would have electric autonomy for each individual due to the satellite and the computer. So it would be a curious new situation, and he said that in that retrieval of acoustic and tactile energies, because remember, he said every technology altered the way the society looked at itself and the way it thought. It permeated everything. It wasn't just what was said on a particular medium in a book or a television show. The medium itself created an environment of services and disservices that affected previous setups. So obviously the Internet would topple the structure of society in the 70s and 80s, and in the 90s we'd have a new society emerging due to the new medium. So he would say, what was the point? What was the particular question? I just forgot the angle.
About the UFO conference.
UFOs. So he would say about anti-gravity vehicles, and he did say in the 60s, that they would reappear. Because when you had a society that was involved with acoustic energies, like tribal people, before literacy and the Gutenberg press changed people, he would say that the sensibility for understanding, experiencing acoustic energies would evoke anti-gravity vehicles. In other words, they would come back, or they would be invented again because we'd understand the quantum society, the quantum energies that the acoustic energies evoked by electronics would evoke this ability to reinvent them. So he saw them coming inevitably.
But he saw them coming in terms of the human being creating them.
That's right.
And so in this UFO conference, wasn't that a point of contention that they've already been created and that's what's being seen?
That's right. The argument in the UFO world is that are the aliens having this technology and bring it to us? Have they given it to a secret group and the secret group are back engineering and making it with help from the aliens? Or are there no aliens and the secret military group is making these UFOs and pretending they're from somewhere else but using them to run the world? That would be the black helicopter syndrome that the militia groups and paranoids and survivalists out there who think that the military has all this advanced technology and they don't believe, the citizens don't believe that they are aliens, that our government has them. And so they call them the black helicopters who can do this psychotronic zapping of people.
All
that's
right.
One. So there's a big argument about who has them, how far have they been developed. But McLuhan would say that the electric environment, the electronic microchip world has so imploded that we have become almost like atoms and quarks. Our institutions and people, we've become so discarnate, was his term, that the whole universe is inside the telephone. Because the electric environment swallows first nature. First nature being the nature made by the creator. Second nature, all the technologies humans make. And we've now come to a co-creator position where we're equal to the creator and our technologies swallow the first nature. That's how dramatic you would make about it.
So in terms of the conference, let's go to that for a moment. In the conference, it's really what it comes down to is people who attend would be pro idea that the government is making this all up and the other side is saying that they're really out there and they have been abducted themselves.
Yes. In other words, what you have here, and here's how we get into health. Since technologies create a new environment, they alter people's psychology, and they also alter people's body image, or body percept was the term McLuhan used, our image. For example, just a quick history, when the Greek culture comes in around 500 BC, it creates a new image of the body and the idea that the skin envelops a group of organs. So the skin as an envelope, enclosing organs, was a new image. Now, today we retrieve ancient modalities. We bring in the occult and the chakra energies. That may have been the way pre-literate societies looked at the body, a very non-defined, with many permeable membrane boundaries, all right? Mm. With the effect of the alphabet, it starts to solidify our image by the writing and passing on information by writing. That created the idea of a bounded body, an envelope enclosing organs. Now, that was the new situation, this package of organs and humors. That got enhanced at the time of the Renaissance when the view of the body became the image of a pumping station. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, you see that imagery at the time of the Renaissance with the body as a bunch of parts connected,
mm-hmm.
almost like primitive machinery.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the 19th century, with the rise of chemistry, the body became a chemistry factory. This was the image that generally sociologically and psychologically became dominant. And the new industrial technologies in the 19th century created the idea that everybody was loaded with germs.
Mm-hmm.
But now the electronic age in the 20th century has gradually brought in people's theories like Hans Selye, where he had the stress field theory of the body, that the body was an organism interacting with an environment. See, with the Greeks in the Renaissance, the visual bias, the detached effect of writing and printing, created a sense of the body separate from the environment. That's why Americans and Canadians don't believe the environment affects them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was the dominant paradigm in the 1560s. Now, people, with the new electronic permeable membrane effect of the post-visual electric imaging, people now have a feeling of the body being affected by the environment. But the point is, I'm saying, our body image changes over time. So the body image in the UFO culture is in a state of confusion as they try to reconcile the Renaissance theory, the Renaissance image, the 19th century image, then the new post-television, post-electronic image of maybe we're energies that can be worked on by acupuncture, by yoga, by visualization, by non-pharmacy kind of drugs, herbs. Remember, the idea that we're a body with chemistry loaded with germs, that image comes in with the industrial development of chemistry in the 19th century. Now, we're well beyond that image of the body, and that's why people don't like drugs. So that's a general run-through in terms of health of how the media changes our image. In the UFO field, you have these people dealing with technological imaging and new ideas about it, and on top of that, they're trying to figure out what technologies are there, and they're thinking of strange beings with vehicles out in space coming and interacting with them.
All right. So I'd like to go back to that, but before we do, I want to touch on this whole idea of health and how it's affected by the technological age in terms of the electromagnetic fields that constantly assault the body, just sitting in front of a computer screen and getting the radiation from that. You know, all the waves that are out there, you know, TV, cellular phone, radio, et cetera, constantly bombarding the body. What, you know, can the body withstand all this?
The imaging, the natural mental imaging that the person makes in understanding the environment they're in certainly can't keep up with the situation. And there's an extra dimension. We generally think of waves, the electric world, as waves coming at us. But we have to understand right here, for example, Delia, you're in my home, and I'm in your home, and we're also in every listener's home that's listening.
Mm-hmm.
So you see the boundaries between people. If we were in person, you'd be 3 feet away from me, we'd be talking. We are inside each other's brains. The telephone does not connect ear to ear, mouth to mouth. It's inside our central nervous system. That was McLuhan's point. And we've extended the central nervous system with telephones and TV. So you see, you can't visualize any sense of distance between you and me. If you put a sense of distance, you put in the image of a wave. But it's not a linear wave. It's a rolling, moving wave.
Mm-hmm.
That's the closest we can come to imaging the fact there is no visual distance between us.
All right. So
that's a shocking image to especially a society that's built on individualism and your own private bubble, your own private space,
mm-hmm.
and a sense of own will. If you're plunged into a merged image like that, which begins with radio, then television, and then the computers, the image we have now is that we're a chip, and we've grown a skin around it. The average kid who's got his laptop has all these media in this little petri dish. And he can go through the whole history of technologies and media quickly and have it there and manipulate it. A great sense of power and autonomy. But remember, it's inside them. So the dramatic image I would evoke is that not that chips are being planted in us, but that chips are what is here. Technology's come alive and has grown human bodies around it.
So that's the image. That's the evolution into the 21st century, as we are chips with skin.
That's right. And what
charming.
So now that's affecting our personal images. Now, how do you manage That's all. We also...
That will affect our personal image. How are they going to do that in the fashion magazines?
Right? Yeah. Where is that at, as they say? Now, on top of that, we are also affecting our social institutions, our language, books, movies, the steel industry, all the previous technologies that create environments, they're all swallowed too. So our collective image of a public space is altered. And so now on Wall Street, people say, man, they're making millions. They're not making millions. There's no money, no paper, that old technology involved. They're just switching back and forth little pulses.
Yeah, I like the image that they just moved Atlantic City to Wall Street.
That's right. And then they moved the whole thing to the moon. Because here's what's interesting. What no science fiction predicted 30 years ago is that when man would land on the moon, nobody saw that the whole world would go there with it, and the moon would come into everybody's home via television.
Mm-hmm.
So there's we don't have imagery from first nature to express that. That's why Stephen Hawking becomes popular, because all his imagery is about imaginary particles. We can't even visualize what it is. We can't map it. So he says, if I show a particle, it's an imaginary particle.
Mm-hmm. So becoming a chip with skin eliminates our first nature. No. The communication through the telephone and the media, computers and whatnot, that eliminates our first nature.
It eliminates our image with first nature. Practically you're inside an environment that's artificial. Now, I'm not saying that technology is bad or that it's not real, but definitely the fact that we're talking here and that I'm in a room with air conditioning is different from someone in the Amazon who doesn't have a telephone and is living with rivers and snakes swimming around, and he's growing, picking seeds and fruits. Totally different environments, right?
Right.
And so that we and how the imaging in my mind will be totally different with the imaging of a person, an Aborigine in South America. So we have to become aware of the differences in their imaging. And you can extrapolate that into the clash of cultures. You have all these different cultures around the world coming into the 20th century at different rates of development. And there, for example, say Saddam, he wanted to industrialize and expand his country. China wants to maybe move out and become an empire. How can China really accomplish that when the whole world's imploded inside a chip? Yet China has just arrived at that level of industrialization. The 19th century imagery gets evoked in it on a collective level. Since nobody really knows the simple McLuhan point that you are on, when you're on the air and telephone or television, that you are there and they are here and you've merged and you can't visualize the dimensions. Think of yourself as in a cyclotron, and the only evidence of we existing that you could visually map are like the traces of a quark. Mm-hmm. In physics, they look at these quarks. They can't position it because of the uncertainty principle. They can't see it and measure its mass at the same time. That is what we have been in the 20th century in terms of our body image. So that basic McLuhan fact and insight, I can apply that to any field. So when I go to the UFOs, I tell them this. They're there meditating or visualizing or in all these different strategies to communicate with the UFOs, to adapt to it, and to evoke them and hope they come. There was even sky watches. They went out in the desert to try to, in the evening, to have the UFOs come.
Mm-hmm.
Now, other people don't agree with that imagery. There's all different interpretations of what the UFOs are. But when I tell them that this imaging is imagining that they're way out there and coming to you, you're forgetting, and you don't know the percept, the image, that you are inside this electronic environment, which has swallowed the environment and canceled space and time. So they're here, and they're inside. And I said, the UFOs are here because they have an identity crisis, too. Even though they may be very advanced, they can still travel. They can travel rapidly, instantly, all over the place. But that is still movement. The television environment is tactile. It's instant. It's magnetized. We don't move. We are resonating with each other.
So, excuse me. So you're taking what is going on today in the beginning of the 21st century for us technologically, and just in terms of really a very primitive form of technology, the telephone and the computer and whatnot, and then you're advancing it with any kind of alien planet or being that would then not even have to travel here, but would be here via their technology.
Yeah, the aliens could be on the telephone tapping us from millions of miles away.
No, that's the government. No, it's not.
Yeah, the government could be, they could be tapping the government and helping us. The point is they electronically are in touch. Remember, we've got Voyagers and satellites going way out there, and we're in touch with them. So I don't know how far our electric environment goes, if it goes a billion light years, but it goes quite far. And the point is to show that everything is collapsed within that because it's instantaneous communication. So that idea just it shocks them, and it alters their mental image of where they're at. So when I presented this, it caused quite a range of responses, from exhilaration to insight, inspiration to disgust.
Okay, well, I can well imagine. You know, it's like in Shakespearean scholars who have spent their whole life studying Shakespeare and attributing the works to William Shakespeare of Stratford-upon-Avon will not even consider that anybody else wrote the works, because they will not take a stand that their life was meaningless or they were wrong their whole life, you know, in their scholarly pursuits. So this could very well apply to the theory on anything.
Right, actually. Now, just take that. It's the idea that Francis Bacon did it that upsets the imagery they've energized and worked on
right.
And interpreting. Any new idea or word or environment upsets people's imagery. It happens all day long, every day.
The globe, the planet is round.
Yes, that upset everybody.
Mm.
So we can look at technologies as words, as ideas, and just see how they affect us psychologically. And now we have on the planet, in terms of health, collective health, a total disruption every day, an invasion of everybody, of groups of people, of nations and institutions, by the ongoing expression of new images and ideas.
All right, well, now what about the people who showed up at the UFO conference who said that they had been abducted? I mean, there's a lot of people who say they've been abducted and relate similar experiences.
Well, they are quite adamant. No matter what. Now, here's another thing. In tribal societies, it was the tradition that it was flexible elders and rigid youth. Since in a tribal society, which is quite involved and a whole different kind of instability than what we have today, they had another kind of stability. But taking that situation, a child would come into that society and would be very rigid and stone-faced as it figured out his identity in relation to the constant problems within the tribe. And the elders who had been through a lot of change were flexible. That's why we have the popular image of this wise Native American Indian compared to the Marcus Welby. You know what I mean? Marcus Welby's this sort of neoconservative guy, maybe kindly, but the image of a President Nixon of the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant is not as flexible as the Native American tribal leader.
Right.
Because tribal societies were flexible, but in the industrial society you have to have a point of view, you have a specialist job and a role, and you become rigid. Now, we now have retrieved tribal societies with the electric environment, so again we have flexible elders and rigid youth. Now, the flexible elders are people who have been through 5 divorces and all kinds of things that we have in, the baby boomer profile, and the young kids are these very stern kids who want to find out who they are because they're being bombarded all the time, so they have to protect themselves to be rigid. Now, within that situation, you have people, once they become adults, and they haven't really matured to become flexible adults, even though they have to live flexibly, they are running around, as we get more upset by new imagery, new technologies more rapidly than in the 60s and the baby boomers, you have adults being very determined and very skillful in maintaining their body image. So the image that they were making love to the reptilian race and having babies and other variations from different levels of extreme imagery, they are very rigid about who they are, and they don't care about new ideas. So there are many people who were adamant that what I was saying was irrelevant. But there are other people, and there's all kinds of people when you're talking to a group, different levels of maturity, who were able to drop their imagery of what they were and said, well, yeah, I'm not making love to a reptilian. I'm making love to my TV screen. So they had a new thing. They began to understand that right here we have machines that are so amazing that they could be considered aliens, and you're involved with them.
So making love to reptilian, you meant like mating with alien beings from outer space.
Yes, that
okay.
was the most extreme position. There were several people who didn't even know they'd made love. They had some weird experiences and then were abducted, but when they were taken to the vehicle, they found that they already had 4 children and met 4 children they had through the reptilians that they didn't know or had no memory that they had.
And they refer to the aliens as reptilians?
Yeah, there's different images. There's the grays, there's the reptilians. They have different kind of body structures, strange body structures. It's like the Eskimo has 50 words for snow, because he lives in the snow and he sees all these different gradations. You go up there, you see just white snow.
Mm.
So this UFO intergalactic communication, which is an image from first nature, the universal imagery that is inside our technological imagery, that kind of snow, in quotes, that people interact with in their visualization, they have all different kinds of snow. So they have like 50 different kinds of aliens now. So within this group that understand it or believe in it, they have fine distinctions.
So, I see.
What?
I see.
Yeah, so that's a tribal mindset. Now, you can see if we're chips with skin growing around us, and that's a metaphor, but it's an accurate metaphor. It's a scientific statement to say that, because we can't visualize the situation. So I'm saying how we're inside, possessed by this invisible electric technology, and then any image of a skin with as envelope containing organs is not appropriate. Now you can see why people grab onto Barbara Brennan. I think these other people write books, and they show the glowing chakras. And you just look at all the chakra holistic imagery in the counterculture in alternative medicine. It's almost a romanticization, an anthropomorphization of the chip, the glowing chip, the glowing light bulb in you. But they overlay nice universal imagery. You see what I'm saying? That's a body image.
Mm-hmm.
That's evoked. We're ransacking other cultures, non-Western cultures, to get these body images.
More than that, I think we're ransacking, as it were, traditional and ancient texts and perceptions that in search of something that'll keep us grounded in what is natural and in what is human.
That's exactly it. We're trying to find our relationship to the first body, which is there. We have bodies. But remember, our mind, as I showed you in the history of medicine, it gets altered by the means of communication. That's the paradox. The means of communication conditions the imagery that can be evoked in the mind. So these, as the means of communication change, our images of our body and the grounded image we're looking for changes. But we're still trying to evoke an image of being grounded.
All right. So now, and in terms of also these people at the UFO conference,
who are trying to ground themselves into first nature, but on the level of a multidimensional universe.
Right.
Because when Orson Welles invaded, people just had a small vision 60 years ago of the universe, and Mars was far away. But as the baby boomers grew up and they had new telescopes and new advanced technology, we started seeing constellations and galaxies, and so we had a broader image of the universe, right?
Right.
Than the 30s. But and now, since we are penetrating time and space, people can say it's multidimensional. There are aliens in this universe and in other dimensions. So you get the channeling imagery. All that is congested into this UFO alien. And you can see it's an extravagant, romantic grabbing of imagery for a situation which cannot be visualized.
All right. So within this, you know, this whole different culture of, you know, looking and seeking for aliens, and you say they have, you know, all these different terms for these different aliens and different body images. So do they agree? Do they not agree? Are they saying, you know, I saw this and you saw that, so you're wrong and I'm right type of thing?
Oh, yeah. There was a constantly bickering over the different panels over what they are doing. Some people think that the UFOs are just the etheric level. They're not in this plane. And so they cite experiences of friends who astral projected, left their body, and bumped into an UFO out in space.
Oh, yeah? They bumped into a UFO?
Yeah, and then slammed back into their body.
Uh-huh.
So they think that the UFO is something on the astral plane, on the etheric plane, on the chakra plane. Then there are others who say that, no, they're made by the government. Then there's others who say, no, they're out there, but they come from the Pleiadians or Orion or the Boothians.
Right.
It's physical.
So, excuse me, Bob, you know what sounds to me is like, you know, from the technological age in this evolution, this chip business with the skin and whatnot, what they're looking for is God.
That's right. They're looking for, now that's what you mean by grounded. They're looking for an image that they can live inside of that gives them a sense of security. For example, when Newton came in, the image of God changed from the medieval image to the image of the universe as a clock.
Mm-hmm.
So by the 80s, the image of God, of the environment, remember the clock comes in with Newton, through the beginning of mechanization. So here was this hidden new technology, this precise form of measurement, which was a novelty for humans. It altered the sense of the womb and the environment, first nature in quotes, that we lived in. But what's paradoxical is that our inventions, our technologies, like Adam naming the animals, the names and the technologies we create alter our images of first nature. It's an interface between our mind and the Creator's mind. So you can see by the 70s, the image of God went from the Newtonian clock to the idea of a radio, an invisible thing that was talking to you, and you were tuned into God. That's why people got into meditation. They retrieved ancient texts, ancient ideas, which were immediately accessible, not as accessible 200 years ago. But now anybody can go to any culture and get ancient texts and looking for imagery, constantly looking for a big ground image that I'm inside of. Now we get to the point here that it's so impossible even to stay up with the changes, that we aren't sure what image we have, and that's the general dis-ease, dis-ease and unease and uncertainty that people have about what is the collective image that we can impose on our children in education. They can't agree on creationism or Darwinism. All these big macro images, none of them have any staying power. So the public feels really insecure about where we are.
And they're easily controlled.
Yeah, right. They're controlled so easily. If there is a big brother that wants to keep people suppressed, they don't even have to do anything anymore. They say, just keep the programs coming out, the Jerry Springers, the content. That doesn't affect people, you know, on terms of totally changing and turning off television. As long as you keep the TV computer environment going, they will remain upset by that and divided among themselves.
Entertain, and bombard.
Right, and that keeps everybody involved and divided. And the old idea of Big Brother, divide and conquer, they don't have to do it. The machine's doing it for us.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about that, machines. For example, let's talk about the weather. And, you know, there's an experiment, they say, that's going on with the government called the HARP experiment, where they're using Nikola Tesla's work theories to affect the weather and learn how to control the weather. They say he who controls the weather controls the world.
Okay, there is a project called HARP, but applying McLuhan, we'd say, as I've said, the universe and the planet and its natural first nature energies are inside this electronic chip vortex, inside this matrix. Therefore, the population would immediately invoke an image. Yes, first nature can be molded by second nature. We can shape and sculpt. So yes, if they're out on the satellites and they're using electronic energies, they can control the puny little first nature energies of weather. There's an example. The image of HARP as molding weather is a population 30 years after the 60s realizing, getting used to the idea that the universe is tiny, that first nature can be molded by our amazing second nature technology. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's an image that will get popular approval. So lots of people talk about HARP. And then people go further than that and say that the HARP can be used to program us through television,
mm-hmm.
program our minds. This is easily accessible and easily understood because people have been gradually, naturally developing a new image of the universe inside a shoebox, so
mm-hmm.
to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what they're missing, to put a positive note on it, is that with the satellite, which was an extension of all the history of technology, but was off the planet, it was the first time the printed press, the movie, the telephone, that evolution of technologies, that continuum, popped out of the planet, popped out of that second nature as well. It was like the astrobody when Sputnik went up 40 years ago. So the human being had a near-death experience, went out of the body technologically. That creates a sense of autonomy, and you can see that in the 60s, across the board, in different ways, in different cultures, everybody said, you can't impose some patterns on me. I'm free to create my own reality. And that caused a lot of conservative backlash, all kinds of different responses over the last 30 years. We now have a situation where kids have all media, and they got it on their lap, in the laptop. Think of the kid as a satellite. He has a great sense, he or she has a great sense of autonomy from the media, not being controlled. Now, that adds a complexity because they are being affected by the technology. That technology says you are independent. You are free of all technologies and its control on you. You can mold whatever you want, like a genetic engineer's petri dish. So we do have an autonomy. Now, when we have cold fusion and these new free energies that come in, that allow us to really implement sociologically a post-money-controlled society. But until we have that, you have the paradox of people being totally controlled, yet going on Jerry Springer and having no sense of privacy and spitting in the face of the media and telling their most bizarre personal stories.
All right, now
there's an independence of spirit that the technology has evoked here.
So let's talk about controlled and led in terms of what's going on with the Y2K.
We are Big Brother now is the Nielsen ratings. They're called the pollster guides,
mm-hmm.
the pollsters. And they're part of this possession of us, and they tabulate every 24 hours, every 2 hours, where the population is in terms of their equipment here in New York and other places to monitor people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the measurement of where we are is constant. So the Y2K is something that I remember about a year ago. People were telling other people about it, and nobody knew about it. And these people were getting ready, said the government's suppressing it, we're going to go run and hide in the mountains because it's going to be a disaster. But if you've been in the supermarket the last three or four months, Y2K is all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a secret thing. So the idea that somebody's trying to hide and cover up the devastating effects of it is not viable now, which it was a year ago, because everybody can see and hear about it. So then we say, are they trying to make us frightened? Now, I have a whole theory about what the Y2K is. That's a chip coming alive and acting out its own apocalypse.
Like a technological faux pas?
Yes. As the machine, as the chip becomes more like the human, more intimately connected to us, it kind of tries to simulate the human as close as possible. Now, it thinks that humans are stupid, or it sees that humans are quite erratic. So it's going to become technology, as it becomes more conscious and it imitates the human, it'll become more human-like, more unstable, and including committing suicide. So we have the Y2K is the machine mentality opping itself. Now, I will tell you that in the long run, what will happen is that the Y2K will not be as disastrous as people project, and the whole millennium scenario will not be as exciting as people hope, like no Jesus will come back or whatever other scenarios. And what will happen is, after Y2K comes and goes, by the year 2001, there's going to be a backlash. People are going to start saying that we weren't worthy to be communicated to by God, by first nature, by this or that. We didn't have the divine experience, which happened 1,000 years ago. They shut down the universities, and this is really not known as a cause of the Dark Age, but my research sees that they shut down the universities 1,000 years ago because the people weren't worthy to be communicated to God, from and to and with God. We will replay that, but it'll be modernized to the point that the people say, the science, the technology has made us too secular, we've lost our contact with first nature, and we have to get back to first nature, let's get rid of science. The scientists will be put onto the defensive for about 5 years, and there'll be this public debate. Meanwhile, the new, more fascinating technologies like cold fusion will be coming at us anyways. And then people by the year 2005 will wake up and say, what are we arguing about whether we want technology or not? It's inevitable. It comes. So I'm predicting that the Y2K will create a backlash due to the fact it didn't do much.
Well, now there's a lot of people out there, Bob Dobbs, who are preparing, storing their food, stocking up, you know, doing serious business, hiding their money, doing whatever they can, you know, to anticipate this cataclysmic event.
And I would suggest they do that as much as possible. If you don't want to do it, follow intuition and don't do it. And we will see what happens. But I'm warning people, be prepared for when it doesn't happen, and that won't be the cataclysm. It'll be the public debate and backlash.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just getting us past the image. See, that's how the government controls it. It sets up a what they call an event horizon, an image that we all revolve around and go to, and we don't think beyond it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and that could even be worse.
Right. So, you know, we only have a few more minutes here. And I know we could go on and on discussing this this whole concept. But with that in mind, give us a little summary or a little lowdown on what's going on, what we can expect as we advance into the 21st century. Homeboy, that's a loaded question. We could be here for another 3 hours.
Yeah, no, it's very simple.
Okay.
Once we get through this millennium image, which comes out of our culture, it's in the Bible, the Dark Age, the Revelations, and the Apocalyptic, and it's in other cultures, we do have to go through this meme, this archetype. Once we get through that, by the year 2010, we're going to have so amazing new technologies. I think that the disease will be eradicated. I think we'll have free energy. And so by the year 2020, people will be living in a relatively secure situation all over the world. And they will be able to live happily and in a state of equanimity that we never experienced before.
Excuse me, is that because we'll have made contact with our first nature again?
Yes. Cold fusion is interesting. It bridges first nature and second nature because first nature, as I see Krishnamurti often here on TV, as he says, first nature can't be killed. It's immortal. Creation, you kill one bird, there's another bird. You can't stop first nature. Now, we've always been trying to create a simulation of that, the perpetual motion machine and free energy, and with cold fusion, which actually creates more energy than goes in. So it violates all our friction-based ideas of physics and the way matter interacts. So we have with cold fusion, have created immortality in our second technologies. They don't die. They create more energy than goes in. It creates a frictionless-based society. So that means we have actually merged, if you can say it, with first nature, and the simulation has been a success. Once we begin to learn to live and have that as an environment, we're going to be a unique situation.
So your prediction is 2010, eh?
That's when the good news will start to surface. I think we got a rough period for the next 5 years. But I think that's what the humans want. They want to have a dramatic denouement, but it'll be within the human context, and they won't notice unless they're smart and are listening to us, they'll notice that the good technologies are coming and you can't stop it.
So they're into it. We're creating it ourselves, right? We need it.
We need it. We're creating all the tension and conflict and success.
Like a woman who loves a good argument.
You said it.
Hey, thank you so much, Bob Dodd, for your prediction and all your information. All right.
Okay.
And how can people get in touch with you if they need to, or are you in?
I got an email. They can email purple purple at ingress INN. That's INGRESS.com. So it's purple at ingress.com, and I have a website www.positone. T-O-N-E. So it's Positone, but a dash between the I and the T. Positone.com/B-O-B, capital letters. Capital B, capital O, capital B. That's the only part that's capitalized, .html. So that's www.positone.com at bob.html.
Okay.
See how we sound like machines in the last stages?
I know. That's a whole new language there.
That's right.
You can't even say HTML.
That's right. What is the body image evoked by that?
I know.
I think the chip with skin around it.
I wouldn't want to meet him.
You just met him. You just were inside its head right now.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Great, D.A. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it here on WNTI 91.9, 2010. See if we slide through these next 5 years. And, you know, you stay tuned to Food for Thought, and I'll keep you updated. We'll keep talking about what's going on. And I think, you know, one of the resources you might want to reach out for is the new summer 1999 edition of the Food and Water Journal. Amazing, really interesting work, and I think if you really want to get some information, you know, kind of keep up on what's happening outside of the mainstream media, then I suggest that you subscriptions. You get a subscription to the Food and Journal, or you send for your information. And here it is. Write this down here: Food and Water Journal. Subscription service, P.O. Box 3000 in, let's see, Denville, New Jersey. That's 07834-9785. Or call Food and Water at 802-563-3300. That's 802-563-3300. Sign up for their new Summer 1999 journal. Very interesting. A lot of stuff talks about the whole experiment with butterflies and the BT corn and pesticides, children, and aggression. Another article, Debating Delusion. A lot of debate, too, on the last journal's efforts concerning the violence, all right, that Michael talked about, eco-violence. So, anyway, that's something to take into consideration. A lot of food for thought there. I'm Delia Quigley. I want to thank y'all for being with me today. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Bob Dodd. And I have lots coming up next week. I'd like to try and get Michael Colby from Food and Water back on the air. Let's talk about some of that eco-violence, see what's going on with that, and what people are saying and how they're reacting to what's going on around the world. So stay with me, be with me, and have a wonderful week, y'all. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.